War II history of a destroyer, Not This Time Vets, the proposed Fort Ord Cemetery and Veteran Services. So please join us for a community discussion of all things veteran. That's this Saturday on the Saturday Special from 10 a.m. to noon on your
Maggot, drop it, give me 1080
radio station KSCO.
And that program was just described as the one that you're going to hear now. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Charlie Friedman. I'm here on KSCO. And we have a number of guests lined up today to speak with you, and hopefully, I mean with you, because we're going to ask for your calls on veterans issues. Skipping right to it, the first person we have in our studio today is Mr. Terry Hutchinson, and his interest is in prisoner of war issues. I'd like to have him introduce himself to you, give a little bit of his qualifications and area of interest. Terry, good morning, and thank you for being with us.
Good morning, Charlie. I have been a Santa Cruz resident for 35 years. I've been with the Vietnam Vets Motorcycle Club for over 10. And I'm the vice president of the Freedom Chapter here in Santa Cruz and the Pacific Coast Region POW MIA officer. And that's basically my credentials, and I've been actively involved in trying to keep this issue alive in front of the government for over 3-4 years now.
Okay. And I know you had a little handout here, which is very handy. I appreciate this. And the first thing that you wanted to emphasize is that they're making some sort of semantic change in definitions at the Department of Defense.
Right.
And the classification prisoner of war will no longer exist. Instead, it's going to be missing or captured. Perhaps you'd like to talk a little about that.
Yes. You know, you see a POW MIA flag flying occasionally around the county. But I want to let people know that, you know, this is not some esoteric ideal or a symbol of a Hollywood movie. You know, this is a reality that many veterans' families live with every day. The reality of waking up one morning and having to live the rest of their lives not knowing what happened to a loved one. The flag says you are not forgotten. POWs are not only on the verge of being forgotten, they are all but eliminated from the English language. According to the U.S. government, they are now missing or captured, not prisoner of war, just gone. U.S. government Directive 1300.18, issued December 18, 2000, does not provide for a prisoner of war status or designation. Under this directive, the most a captured service member can hope for is the ambiguous designation status missing, captured, or MIA-C. Nowhere in this directive are the words prisoner of war. Another word significant to me is everyone is classified as a casualty. And the third significant finding is there are no casualty codes or groups to designate a live person.
Is it reasonable to assume that if somebody is classified as captured, that we're assuming that they are in custody somewhere as a prisoner?
Right.
I would think.
But the other thing, Charlie,
yeah,
is that, you know, the Geneva Convention or international law does not recognize the status captured.
Do you think this has to do with the fact that the current war we're fighting is a war with a terrorist organization that has no nation-state status, rather than previous wars where we would be at war with, say, North Korea, or at war with Japan, or at war with Vietnam or the Viet Cong? It's a whole new bag of can of worms in terms of the legalities. For that reason. And also it has a lot to do with the way the war has to be fought.
Well, I that may have something to do with it, but the government, I like to call this the government's dirty little secret, they have abandoned POWs over the last 3-4 wars, going back to at least World War II. There is significant proof that they have, because of political necessities or political benefits, have not pursued any of our POWs. World War II, Korea, Vietnam. You know, I watched a documentary on Guantanamo Bay Detention Camp, and something very interesting came out. The DOD was getting bad press because of the 13 suicide attempts some 6, 7, 8 months after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than correct the problem or try to do something different with these detainees, Mr. Rumsfeld and the DOD rewrote the directive to say that detainees had intentional self-inflicted injuries, a non-reportable incident. This was done, you know, like I said, 7-8 months after 9/11.
It would strike me, the detainees at Guantanamo Bay, I'm kind of looking at this, we're talking about Al-Qaeda people, so on. These are terrorists. It's a terrorist organization. Of course we're going to interrogate them, probably rather strenuously.
No, Charlie, don't get me wrong. I don't have any problem with interrogating these people because they are terrorists. Anybody that declares war on women and innocent women and children has no rights as a POW.
I agree with that.
But the point is that the DOD rewrote the directive.
It's a legitimate tactic for the terrorists, then, to try to kill themselves so that they can't give up information.
The DOD rewrote the directive to lie about what they were doing. The same thing they're doing about the POWs.
Wonder why they would do that. For what would be the purpose? I've got a guess on it, but I'd like to hear you elucidate a little first. I think maybe we'd have a different slant on what the purpose for that would be.
Well, the purpose is to keep the truth from the American people.
The truth that these detainees are attempting to commit suicide.
Right, and the torture.
I agree with that.
A lot of Americans are going to agree with torturing these people, but they're not going to. The government's not going to stand up and say they're doing it.
Even if the government isn't torturing them, and I'm not going to get into whether they are or not, because there's been plenty of supervision at Guantanamo by Red Cross, various other people who've gone down there and looked around. On the other hand, we both know that if they decide to hide things, they can hide things. So. We're together on that.
Right.
But for a person who has knowledge that somebody wants to say, well, I'm going to kill myself in order to keep from giving up that knowledge, frankly, that's what a person in that situation, if they're dedicated enough, could be expected to do.
Right. I remember, this is about the soldiers, alive POWs of war.
Oh, okay. Well, let's get back onto that topic.
And I'd just like to read a couple figures from past POWIMI reports. The Korean War,
okay.
There was a total of 8,177 unaccounted for Americans. As of 1994, reports of 20 Americans still alive in North Korea. Vietnam War, total of 2,331 unaccounted for Americans. 6,000 live sightings reports since 1973. And these figures here are from the DOD reports themselves. Unresolved first-hand live sightings of Americans in captive environment pre-1976. 19 first-hand live sightings, 1976 to 1980, and hopefully or possibly after the Select Senate on POW Committee's hearings, there was 2 from 76 to 80. 1996 to 2000, there was 1. First-hand live sightings, and of 2001 to 2005, there was 2 first-hand live sightings of Americans in captive environment.
Now, why at this late date? Well, for the Koreans, in a way, I can understand it, because the head of state of Korea was Kim Il-sung, and is now Kim Jong-il. Both of these guys are crazy. And crazy people do crazy things. I could understand them holding onto Americans. Then the question is, what do you do? You're dealing with a maniac who happens to be in charge of a country. If we send in some kind of
there was nothing done politically, diplomatically, humanitarianly, nothing done.
We don't know that. We don't know that.
Particularly in the case of Korea,
if you're going to deal with them, you have to do it with the doors closed. There's no way in the world that you're going to get anything out of them in public. Kim Jong-il is crazy. He's not rational. And this is the kind of thing that an irrational person would do, would retain these people. The Korean War ended in 1953. As of 1994, reports of 20 Americans still alive. Let's accept that at face value. That means that those people have been there for 40 years. Now, we know that the North Koreans have seized, kidnapped Japanese nationals and taken, they recently turned loose a couple of them who'd been in North Korea how long? 20 years or something like that? The North Korean government is... And when you're dealing with crazy people, you've got to expect crazy conduct. What can we do about something like that?
Well, Charlie, you have to educate yourself first. Okay. And you can sit there and say that the government of North Korea is crazy.
It is.
But you have to learn what's really going on. There's a video out, a CD now, Missing, Presumed Dead, mm-hmm. The Search for American POWs.
Mm-hmm.
It was produced by Bill Dumas, a nephew of Bob Dumas, who has spent the last 50 years trying to bring his Korean War POW brother Roger home. The documentary chronicles search for his brother and the government's cover-up of abandoned POWs of war since the Korean War. I could go into what that video is about, and it's some very disturbing stuff.
I'm sure it is.
But we obviously don't have time to do that. I recommend going to www.missingpresumeddead.com.
Give that again, would you please? I want to make sure everybody in our audience has an opportunity to jot it down.
www.missingpresumeddead.com.
No caps.
No caps. Okay. Send for the video. And judge for yourself.
Outstanding. Very good advice.
One of the points in the movie was in 1954, when it was established that the government under the soldiers general Dwight David Eisenhower did not want to have to deal with North Korean government, the Chinese Communist government, or the Russian Communist government about the 8,000. POWs that they knew they left behind. The president sat down and wrote an order declaring them all presumptive dead. Wrote them off.
I wonder how it was that in the aftermath of World War II there wasn't some kind of an outcry, because the numbers obviously for World War II are so much larger than any of the others, simply because it was a much bigger war and many more people involved.
Well, it's hard to explain in one sentence.
If you have... Let me see here. Using your figure, 25,000 POWs known held by the Soviet Union.
Right.
If you had 25,000 American families who had reasonable cause to believe that their people were being held by the Soviets, who incidentally were our allies during that war, I think they would, and of course Harry Truman was still president then, but Truman wouldn't have taken to that very kindly. He was not the sort of person who would have suffered it gladly.
Okay.
What I'm saying is that... What basis, who says that they had 25,000 Americans at the end
government.
Of World War II? We know that they
captured... These are government figures.
So the U.S. government, on the one hand, is saying these are the figures, and on the other hand, they're denying them. Hey, that's altogether possible. I'm not trying to bait you. I believe
right,
that it's possible
right.
for the government to say two things at once.
A book that is a very good book called Betrayed.
Uh-huh.
It's by Joseph D. Douglas, Jr., goes into depth about the POWs that were sent to Russia.
Terry, we're going to have to take a break right now. I want to ask you two things. Number one, I want to ask you to hang around the radio station a little while longer if you can. We may be able to get you back in later on. And number two, I want to ask you to please give that website once more to the people.
It's www.missingpresumeddead.com.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we're doing a special program on veterans today because Armistice Day is coming up. Yes, that's right, I said Armistice Day. Some of us don't change. If you want to join us later on, the phone number is 479-1080. We're going to take a break right now on the Saturday special.
When people are crying, this is Aaron Neville speaking for the American Red Cross. When a hurricane like Katrina passes, it leaves behind massive devastation. Just because the weather map shows the storm is over doesn't mean it's over. People have lost their homes, lost their families. People were glued to their TVs. Where will it hit? Where will it hit? It's still hitting. For some people, Hurricane Katrina could last for the rest of their lives. This is a country that comes together in times of need. Do whatever you can. Please help these people put their lives back together. Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or go to redcross.org and click Donate Now. If it takes a while, keep trying. Please help the devastated victims of Hurricane Katrina and thousands of other disasters each year. Go to redcross.org or call 1-800-HELP-NOW. Right now the sun is shining, but the work has just begun. Brought to you by the American Red Cross, the Ad Council, and this station.
Hello, I'm Robert Stangerl. Many Santa Cruzans know me as Big Boy. The original Stangerl family has been in business since 1879. Our name stands for quality, quantity, and great service. Howard Gilda's restaurant on the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf is still the fishing headquarters for the area. It's where fishermen gather every morning for coffee and breakfast before heading out on the bay. Stop by Gilda's and say hello. Both Gilda and I and my son Dino look forward to meeting you at Gilda's at the center of the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf.
All right. You asked for it? Now you've got it. Yep, Sunday at 4 p.m., it's Dave Allen. Some eclectic and interesting talk. That's Dave Allen. Remember, Sunday at 4 o'clock with Dave Allen. Followed by a blast from the past at 5 o'clock with, you guessed it, Dave Allen. It's a double Sunday with a cherry on top. Sunday at 4 p.m. with Dave Allen. So assume the position on your radio dial, AM 1080 KSCO.
And we're back on the Saturday special. I'm Charlie Friedman, and Terry Hutchinson is still here in the studio, and we're also joined by Michael Olson. Terry had a point he wanted to make, and would you please go ahead and do that now?
Thank you. Just a couple points. Freedom Chapter of the Vietnam Vets Legacy Vets Motorcycle Club wants to donate a POW MIA flag to five local businesses with a flag pole in front of their establishment if they promise to fly it every day they're open. If they can contact the station here, or if they can call me at 338-0231. We'd be happy to come down and donate a flag to them and to help promote this issue.
Outstanding.
The other point is that there's a brother in the club here. His name is Dan Stock. He puts out a free monthly newsletter that all you have to do is email him at POWPXDDS@cloudnet.com and ask him to send you his monthly newsletter on help free POW MIAs now, and it'll do a lot to educate you on this issue.
Thank you very much, Terry. Appreciate your taking the time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Michael is by golly, this is a
new, that's me.
A new hat you're wearing, Michael Olson. You're usually interviewing people sitting where I'm sitting, but this time you're here to talk about a book you're writing.
Well, actually, I don't want to talk about a book I'm writing, because the first law of writing anything is not to talk about your works in progress.
Uh-huh.
But I would like to talk about veterans, World War II veterans. That is the subject of the book that I am writing. And so I've been following a group of World War II destroyer sailors around in their reunions for about the last 6 years.
Wow.
And collecting oral history. But several years ago, we were at a hotel in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And these guys, of course, are all in their mid-80s now.
Oh, yeah.
So they're old guys. And we were setting them up in the hotel lobby, getting ready for a reunion photograph. You know, they're all lining up, and the shorter ones were kneeling down on the thinly carpeted floor, you know, and on 85-year-old knees, and they were grumbling and groaning and moaning, and, well, they were just old.
Right.
But then, right then, two beautiful young women walked into the hotel lobby. Low-cut dresses, high-heeled shoes, and a beautiful little wiggle to their bottom. And they paraded right in front of these 80-plus-year-old veterans of World War II. And just like magic, these 80-year-old sailors became 20-year-olds. And, we got to see them as James Michener found them on the island of Espirito Santo.
Uh-huh.
In 1942, and these guys were there. They pioneered Espirito Santo for the assault on Guadalcanal.
Mm-hmm.
James Michener found them there, and they became the model for his series of short stories, and which called South Pacific, which of course later became the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical.
Right.
There ain't nothing like a dame.
Right, exactly.
So here are these guys, these 80-plus-year-old sailors, in this hotel lobby, and they were 20-year-olds, became 20-year-olds right in front of our eyes. And it was a wonderful opportunity to see my parents' generation as our children, as young, you know, they just swapped. They became our children. Instead of being our fathers, they became our sons, and we saw them as 20-year-olds. Just standing there with these two beautiful women walking in front of them, and the sap just rose to the surface. But as I spent time with these guys over the course of years, I came to know them very well. And I came to see in them something that I could not see in myself, which is the sense that they had done a job and they had done it well. They had endured incredible living circumstances to survive and win World War II. And as a Vietnam vet, I simply could not find that in myself anywhere. And, you know, in the course of the years that I've been working on this project, I come to think or to believe that way down deep inside of me is the sense that I messed up and lost that war, and that somehow I have a personal responsibility for messing up or for losing.
What a terrible way to think about it.
Yeah, I knew it.
I can understand where it would come from, but geez, that would be awful.
So my question to you guys, you're both Vietnam vets, do you think that way down deep inside of you, you also harbor that notion that, geez, we screwed up, we lost?
Terry, you want to respond to that first? Or?
Well, like I said, we didn't lose that war.
Up on the microphone, Terry.
We didn't lose that war. No matter what the public opinion was or the reason that the government got us into that war, every man that went over to Vietnam went over with a pure heart and wanting to serve his country and do the right thing.
Yeah.
And we did that.
We did it, but we lost.
We didn't lose.
I agree with Terry.
We were not given the chance to win. The only thing that any Vietnam vet can hold on to is the reality that he went and did what he had to do and was told to do for his country.
I understand that, Terry. And, you know, there's no rational reason for me to hold this thing way down deep inside. And, in fact, I never thought it was there until, you know, I spent a lot of time with these World War II vets. And there's no reason for me to harbor this. I was just a sailor before the mast, as it were.
Michael, let me break in here. I may be able to help you a little with this. If you look back at your history, in 1972-73, there were peace talks in Paris. We finally arrived at a settlement of the war. The settlement was conducted on mutually acceptable terms. The North Vietnamese accepted certain things. We accepted certain things. One of the things that we reserved the right to do if the North Vietnamese went down on their part of the bargain was to take some kind of action. In 1975, was it 74? 75, I believe it was. We'd been fighting the Viet Cong in the South for years. That was settled by the Paris agreements.
Right.
In 1975, North Vietnamese launched an outright invasion of South Vietnam. The regular NVA, North Vietnamese Army, simply came down and started taking the place over, at which point President Ford, by this time, said, hey, you know, this is a violation of these agreements. You can't do that. And the Congress of the United States at that point said no. And Gerald Ford did not have the ability to do what he wanted to do and what he felt would be the right thing to do. If you want to put the blame on loss of Vietnam somewhere, it doesn't belong to any of the service people. There was a peace.
Well, of course it
was
a negotiated peace. It doesn't belong there.
The Congress of the United States wears that hat.
Yes, it does not belong there, but it's there.
There's two types of Vietnam vets. There's those that try to say it's over, it's gone, maybe it never even really happened anymore. But then there's the Vietnam vet that lives with it every day.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm
if
wondering.
If you live with it every day and you work through it, you understand that, you know, it. We did what we had to do, and we did a good job. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and we still have this
and
notion.
We were not allowed to win.
Yeah,
that's
and
another very good point.
We don't own right. any of that,
but we do own it. I think at least I never thought I owned it, Terry.
For a long time, I was upset about the public opinion. But I go all across this country now, and I come out from having lunch, and there's notes on my motorcycle. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Yeah. We're sorry we treated you the way we did. And it happens all the time, I get that.
Well, you know, there's so many of us who came back from Vietnam and had a terrible time adjusting to the world. And I wonder if part of that terrible time adjusting did not have a lot to do with it, with that sense of guilt that, geez, we lost it somehow. You know, I look at
our
parents.
You're talking about survivor guilt, not lost.
Well, whatever guilt it is.
Every man that comes back feels guilty.
There's that, too.
Not only that, but there's the way the Vietnam vets were treated when they came back.
Yeah.
And this is something that Terry has already spoken about. Nowadays, times have changed, and he says, you know, people are willing to say thank you, etc. Mm-hmm. But that certainly wasn't the case in
1975. Well, I certainly remember those days, that's for sure.
Well, it was atrocious.
Yeah.
That's one of the worst things this country has ever done.
Yes. So, but I look at our parents' generation and how they came back from World War II with this wonderful sense that they had done a good job. And that sense gave them this just wonderful outlook on life. And I see it in their eyes today. They're 85. And yet, you know, when they talk about their experiences, there's a sense of pride there that's just beautiful. And they came back and they married and they had children. And these vets are still with their wives. Or if they aren't with their original wives, their wives passed on and they remarried. But they had a sense of this wonderful sense that allowed them to hold the world together and really go out and build a world. And I just wonder if...
You won't find too many Vietnam vets that I know, especially in the club, but you won't find many that are sorry they went.
No. I'm not sorry that I went, you know. But what I'm saying is that... And I'm saying that this is a relatively new revelation to me. And I never in the least bit expected that I would find that within myself, that I would have this sense that I messed up, that personally. I mean, there's no rational reason for it at all. I was just a sailor before the mast. I wasn't responsible for anything in
mm-hmm.
the world
right.
other than doing my own little job.
You did, I'm sure.
Which I did.
As we did.
And which we all did. And yet, you come home with this sense that, geez, I messed up. But being with these World War II veterans was perhaps the most wonderful sense of healing. You know, that spending time with them,
yeah.
I got the sense that, oh, I'm okay. And truly, truly a magnificent experience. But I'm just curious, as maybe I'm the only one in the world that come to this realization that, geez, I screwed up. I lost. I didn't do my job.
Well, in this particular case, neither Terry nor I share that feeling, but to think that you're the only person in the world who would have that reaction simply beggars the imagination. I'm sure you're speaking for a significant number of people, and I'm glad you brought it up because I never thought of it in those terms. It's a new thought to me.
Yeah, I never either. I really didn't, Charlie, until I spent time with these World War II vets. And not just a little time, but a lot of time.
And having the opportunity to observe their attitude and their elan
mm-hmm.
and so on.
Exactly. And in seeing that elan, and then I look at myself and go, well, why don't I have that? What am I missing here? What is in me that is not like that?
And that's the answer.
And that was the only answer I could come up with. And so I... You know, it helped me perhaps look at myself and say, well, maybe there is something there. Maybe there is this sense here that I did mess up. And spending time with these World War II vets was just an absolutely wonderful experience. So in that light, all of you Vietnam vets out there, go rub shoulders with a World War II vet once in a while. It's an absolutely wonderful experience, I'll tell you that.
So what I hear you saying is that this feeling on your part was probably there all along,
yeah,
but it wasn't until you had the experience of working with these older veterans,
yeah, exactly,
that you were able to understand it, identify it.
Well, yeah, and looking at them and seeing this wonderful sense of elan, like you say, that I recognized that something was missing in me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why do not I have that sense that they have? What's missing? You know, I went away.
The camaraderie.
Pardon?
The camaraderie.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it would be interesting.
That's right.
The most recent.
Absolutely right.
The most recent successful military involvement the country's had, 1991 Gulf War, and I'd be interested in maybe talking with a Gulf War vet. I mean, those people, they did a great job.
Yep.
Some of us think that they should have had an opportunity to finish it, but then again, that's another issue, and that's a political question, mm-hmm, not a military question. But
yeah,
I'd be interested in knowing if those veterans certainly are justified, yeah, in feeling that, hey, we did our job.
And, you know, what role do politics have in this sense that I have way down deep inside that I screwed up? Well, of course there are politics involved in that, but politics, of course, were way beyond me because was just a mere sailor on the ship.
You follow your orders.
You know, yeah, following orders and doing...
Of the officers appointed over you and of the President of the United States, so help me God.
Amen. Amen.
We're going to take a quick break on the radio program. I'm Charlie Friedman, joined in the studio today by Michael Olson and Terry Hutchinson. And after the break, Donna Jacobs will be with us over the telephone. I notice she's already called in.
Hello, so Donna.
We're all set. She belongs to a group called Not This Time Vets, a local group formed a year ago. I'm sure we'll have an interesting conversation. If you want to join it, why don't you go ahead and see what you can do about that. 479-1080 is our phone number here. That's 479-1080. You can also reach us at 477-1340. And if you want to fax some information in, 475-2967. This is KSCO Santa Cruz. I'm Charlie Friedman. The Saturday Special will be back in a couple of minutes.
Hello, this is Tom Quinn, the host of Perspectives Radio Show. Every Saturday at noon, we give you cutting-edge news about current events. We interview well-known experts on a variety of issues, so listen in this Saturday from noon to 1 to Perspectives. Thank you.
As you sit where you are right now and listen to the sound of my voice, as a question, I wonder what it would be like to work in radio. Ever crossed your mind? How do I get started? Is my voice good enough? Well, KSCO is looking for board operators. This is an entry-level position. No experience is necessary, and full training will be provided. So if a fun, pleasant working environment in radio is on your dial, call Rosemary at 475-1080 during business hours.
Santa Cruz teacher Casey Evans has something to say about the special election.
Arnold Schwarzenegger calls me a special interest because I belong to my union. He's wrong. Students are my special interest. When the state couldn't solve its budget problem last year, the education community agreed to give up $2 billion in funding. The governor promised to pay it back this year. He broke that promise. My students are suffering. He forced a costly special election on our state. I was upset about the waste of taxpayer money. Now I feel the best way to say no to the governor's bad ideas is by voting no on 74, 75, and 76. 74 singles out teachers to blame for the problems of public education. 75 blames unions for the state's problems because we spoke out against the governor's broken promise. 76 would cut $40 billion from education over the next 10 years. Don't play the governor's blame game. November 8th, vote no on 74, 75, and 76.
Paid for by the California Federation of Teachers Co-Prop Ballot Committee.
Well, AISI, it was NBD.
You don't know what your kids are saying online or who they're saying it to. A lot of times, neither do they. Last year, 1 in 5 children was sexually solicited online. To protect your kids' online life and to get a full list of acronyms kids are using, call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com. Help delete online predators. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
And back to the Saturday special with your host, Charlie Friedman.
And back we are. Thank you very much, Michael. And let me see here. I'm going to go ahead and see if I can make this thing work the way it's supposed to. And we're going to have Donna Jacobs joining us on the live line. Donna, hello.
Hi, good morning, Charlie. How are you?
You are there. Bless your heart. Okay. These, you know, I've been doing radio for a long time, and these computerized contraptions give me the screaming willies. I am so glad you could join us this morning. Why don't you tell us a little about yourself and the group that you're with?
Okay. I am president and founder of Not This Time Vets, and I've been listening to the show, and it's the reason that we named the organization Not This Time Vets is to deter everything that unfortunately has happened to our Vietnam vets. And I'd really like to thank Terry and all the members of his organization that have stepped up and really participated and supported Not This Time Vets and our goals. We became, the whole thing started for us on the 9th of November. Since then, we have filed and received our 501c3. Some of the projects that we worked on is we had a very successful Armed Forces Day parade on May 20th in Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
And we had people from Arizona, Nevada, Oregon, and Washington come all the way to Santa Cruz to participate in this parade. One of the other projects that we're working on right now is getting support for the Fort Ord Cemetery Project.
Uh-huh.
We've started a career outreach program to get employers, and if there's any out there listening, we need you. So when our troops come back to the immediate Santa Cruz, Monterey Bay area, they have jobs waiting for them.
Right, so, that's very important.
Yes, and we also are going to be applying for some of the mental health funding that's going to be coming out at the first part of the year for educational purposes, and we'd like to get some of the funding that's coming out to start a PTSD education for the families, local law enforcement, and clergy to help recognize maybe some of the symptoms of a veteran that is experiencing PTSD so they can be led to the proper agency for help. PTSD is a main issue that are facing our returning vets, as well as the veterans that have returned from many of the conflicts before. We will be participating in the Veterans Day ceremony at the Vets Hall in Santa Cruz on Friday. That's going to be an all-day event. Not This Time Vets is also going to be awarded Veteran Organization of the Year, which has been a really great thing for us.
So that's going to be at the Veterans Hall or in Santa Cruz on Armistice Day.
Yes, on November 11th, the event actually starts at 8 o'clock in the morning and goes until 9:30 in the evening. And so we'd like everybody to come down. There's going to be a breakfast provided by the American Legion. There's going to be a flag-raising ceremony. There's going to be an award ceremony at 12 noon. There's going to be a barbecue that's hosted by Not This Time Vets and the Bill Motto Post. There's going to be a showing of the movie Saving Private Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a poetry reading by the disabled American veterans. And there's going to be Al Sherman, who is going to come in and speak for the Veterans for Peace. So we've done a lot of things that have been pretty productive in the last year for our veterans. And listening to the first part of your show,
mm-hmm.
As I was saying, you know, what we have to do, and it comes down to not only the civilian community, but our government, we have to do something to rectify what happened to our Vietnam vets and to really educate our community about the veterans that are returning from the current conflicts that we're in, so the same problems don't arise. And personally,
let me interrupt for just a second, please. I want to, you've raised several interesting issues, and there may be some people in our radio audience who'd like to have an opportunity to ask you a question or make an observation. I'd like to give the telephone numbers for you. This is KSCO Talk Radio. Talk means you, our listeners. So at 479-1080 or 477-1340, you can join Donna Jacobs and I on the air here and talk with her about these issues. And the fax number is 475-2967. One other question I wanted to ask you, Donna, as you were speaking, about the idea of trying to make sure that when vets return, they have jobs and they're treated reasonably well. What are you doing right now? I mean, the war isn't over yet, obviously, but the people who are going to be veterans are right now over there doing their jobs. And I'm absolutely sure that your organization is totally aware of that and that you're doing things to help folks out with their current needs.
What we're doing right now is we're acting as a clearinghouse for any veteran that calls or their family that calls. We have the information to lead them to all the current organizations that have already been set up by other veterans organizations and all government organizations. And one thing I'd like to really state is Not This Time Vets is totally non-political. We're not for the war. We're not against the war. We're simply about supporting our troops and honoring our veterans.
Yeah, as you were speaking, I got that impression very clearly just from the things you had to say, that this was not, your organization doesn't have some sort of axe to grind. What you're doing is, you know, it's all right there on the surface. We're trying to help our veterans.
That's correct, and our veterans and our troops, just to keep support for them.
We have a telephone call. Donna, would you care to talk with one of our listeners?
Certainly.
Okay. Paul and Monterey, thank you very much for joining us on the program today. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, this is one of those 80-year-old World War II vets.
Oh, one of the people Michael Olson was talking about.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for what you did for us.
And your latest talk talked about the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to relate that some weeks ago I heard on your program that the four-door thing was not going well at all. In fact, it was stalled. And so I'm one of those 80-year-old vets, I'm thinking about a place to lie. I've been here for 50 years and thought that four-door idea was ideal. Mm-hmm. Or a veteran cemetery.
I'm going to interrupt you for just a second, Paul, because I hadn't mentioned this, so this is on me, but we have a gentleman by the name of Terry Reeder scheduled to be with us next on the program, the 11 o'clock hour.
Oh,
and he is specifically going to speak. He's a VFW member, and he's going to talk about the four-door cemetery.
Can I call back?
I wish you would.
All right, because I have a whole litany there that it's not very pleasant to hear.
Well, I'm hoping that Terry will be with us after the top of the hour, and he will be far better equipped to respond to your observations than either Donna or I would be.
She mentioned Fort Ord, so I thought that was the opening for the Fort Ord discussion, but okay. Thank you. I'll call back.
Donna, do you have anything to offer on that?
I do. Congressman Sam Farr, I am working with his office just to try to gather, get the word out there regarding the Fort Ord Cemetery. And it is a much-needed thing here in the Central Coast. And what Not This Time Vets is doing is we're just trying to get the civilian community aware of things that are going on regarding our veterans and working with the organizations to get the word out to the civilians and the civilians more interested in helping out and putting their name and their vote to things and projects that are going to help our veterans.
Paul, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Excellent. You'll never guess who just walked in and sat down.
Being that she was with Sam Farr,
yeah.
I understand that his bill, which, by the way, I called their office to try to get the bill, and I never got a response back. But the fact that the Fort Ord idea, Sam Farr is talking about a federal cemetery. And in order to do that, you have to get a variance from the Congress of the 75-mile rule.
Well, Paul, Terry just walked in, so he's with us now.
Okay,
why don't we let him? Why don't we let him join us here?
All right.
And maybe have something to say about that. You heard what Paul was just saying, Terry. Could you respond to him?
I'll do the best I can. This is actually a real sensitive issue. We have about four veteran cemeteries right now in California. And most
state
people,
state or federal.
Well, let me take one thing at a time because there's some changes going on. We have the one at up at San Bruno Golden Gate National Cemetery, which is virtually full. I say virtually because if spouses are buried there, then the other spouse can be buried there eventually. So it's not full in the 100% sense, but it's pretty much full. And then we have San Joaquin Valley National Cemetery over near Santanella, you know, where the Anderson split pea soup kind of over there.
Is that
right?
Federal state? I'm that, trying.
No, there are no state cemeteries for veteran cemeteries right now.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but let me get into that in a sec. Then down south, I think it's called Rosecrans, Point Loma, San Diego.
San Diego, yeah.
And then Riverside. And Riverside, I think, is the headquarters for the state. There's been a lot of discussion over the years to add more because California is so spread out. The problem is that the federal government in its operation of these cemeteries, I'm not familiar with the 75-mile rule. Well, what I'm saying is I'm not familiar with that per se, but what it is when there is a national cemetery relatively close to a proximity, they're not real anxious to open another one.
75 miles, it's a law, it's a rule. I mean, you should know that. It's legislation that says it's a 75-mile limit, that no national cemetery can be built within that limit. And it needs a variance, according to one of the guys in Washington. And the variance that they try to get is probably impossible to get, because another legislator said that if they had a variance on the 75-mile limit, then the whole nation would go crazy asking for variances. So the only alternative, as I talked to many people, was the state cemetery. And as far as the state cemetery, there seems to be very little interest by Governor Schwarzenegger's office or by Senator Maldonado. And although Salinas, one of the assignments, has a bill in it's gathering dust somewhere. And Jeff Denham also sent a bill in, and it failed to pass the committee. So there's a total disregard for the veterans, as far as I'm concerned, particularly the older guys. And when you think of that, I think we're somewhere between 40,000 and 60,000 or 70,000 veterans in this area, and not to mention their families. So it's a pretty sad circumstance where the progress of this project is either slowed to zero or no interest. And I called even...
Paul, would you...
No, wait, let me continue. I called all the offices, all the legislators, and including Governor Schwarzenegger's office, and including, by the way, Vice President Cheney. And the only response I got back was, believe it or not, was from Cheney's office. And Maldonado, totally disinterested. Salinas never responded. And so that's why it's pretty emotional on my part that there's total disregard. And I hope to God that the veterans of this area really, really complain to their legislators for the disgraceful response regarding this project.
Charlie, can I step in for 1 second, please?
Please do.
Okay, what Paul is saying is really important, and going back to Not This Time Vets being a civilian organization, it's really time that the civilians of this country step up and back their veterans. And that's where we're going to get some place by helping our veterans, is the veterans have been fighting for themselves for so long that they need the support of the civilians to put some pressure on the government by their votes to get things changed and worked out for our veterans. And
before
that's,
we all die.
And it's very important that the civilians step up and support our veterans. Our veterans have given us everything that we have in this country. It all comes down to the men that have fought for us. And it's time for the civilians to step up and fight for our veterans. And that's why, you know, everybody's vote is really important. And as soon as the civilians join our veterans and put some pressure on the government to get things changed, it's going to stay a slow process. That's why I think that it's really time for the Americans to step up and thank and recognize and honor and back our veterans.
Well, I'm certainly glad that you did put in that particular comment, because it's what this program is all about. It's certainly something that needs to be pointed out, particularly, as you say, to civilians who might not, they're just not conscious.
In the last year, Charlie, I have just been so blessed and honored to literally speak to from the oldest veterans from World War II, from every conflict that we had, down to returning Afghan and Iraqi vets. I've just been so blessed. And these men and women have worked so hard, have given their lives and their emotion and physical life to protect this country and to step up and do what is right. That it's time that they're paid back and they're honored and they're supported. And it's really up to the civilians to recognize what these men and women have done for our country.
By the way, even the newspapers are kind of lackluster in this interest. I sent a letter into the Monterey Herald from 2 weeks ago regarding this question, and I got no response regarding the letter to bring it up to the people. I mean, the people don't know about it. In fact, I didn't know about the delay in the Fort Ord Cemetery until I heard it on this program some 2 or 3 weeks ago, which just bugged the heck out of me, and that's why I really wrote all over the place.
You know, Paul, as you've talked about the approach, you know, state versus federal, those are serious issues, and I have never heard of any kind of a state veteran cemetery. And
that's interesting.
I believe they're all, you know, they're all federal because obviously the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines are all federal establishments. Now, there may be some reason why Fort Ord was a federal installation, as we all know. I think the federal government still has, you know, control over it.
No, it doesn't.
Who does? Did they give it to the private
it's to a separate board.
If it's in, and also, if it's in other hands, then there may be an issue there.
No.
Now, you mentioned you got a response from Vice President Cheney's office. We've got just about 30 seconds before we have to end this segment. What did Cheney say?
Fort Ord has a 175-mile acre, specially for cemetery.
Okay.
Now, the state cemetery requires a grant from the VA in government, which is where Cheney sent my letter to them to get this thing going, where they would have a grant, and they would pay $10 to $20 million for the building of the cemetery, providing the state maintains it every year.
That is correct.
That's a state. That's a state cemetery.
Hmm,
and the thing that puzzles the hell out of me is that our legislators here are not taking up on that, are not moving on it. They've been going on for 2 or 3 years.
Okay, hang on a second, Paul. We have to break for news at the top of the hour. We'll be back with Terry Reeder and Donna Jacobs after news here at KSCO Santa Cruz, KOMY Watsonville. This is the Saturday Special. I'm Charlie Friedman. See you in a few minutes.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lisa Carton. Threatening our nation's capital, 3 men being held in London, suspected of targeting landmarks in Washington, D.C.
Spreading well inland overnight, otherwise mostly clear. Lows in the midst, Charlie Friedman.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back. KSCO has the inside track.
And we are back on the Saturday Special. Charlie Friedman. I'm joined in the studio by Terry Reeder. We still have Donna Jacobs on the line. We're going to talk a little more about veterans' issues until noon.
But I really got to go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
And here we are. Terry, we had a call at the end of the last hour. We've got a fella, Scott, on the phone who's been waiting for a while. I want to take his call right away. But we had a caller, Paul from Monterey, who was very concerned about the cemetery, you know, and federal state issues, a 75-mile rule. You mentioned you had a couple of things you wanted to say to kind of ice that.
Well, first of all, any honorably discharged veteran has a right to be buried in a national cemetery. I mean, that's the guarantee, and certainly, you know, there are not a lot of those around. And we currently have one, a very nice one. It's we call it Santanella. Actually, it's Gustine is the mailing address, but it's San Joaquin.
Santanella. Yeah. I drive through there all the time. That's
right.
Where it is.
It is. It's San Joaquin Valley National Cemetery, and it's a beautiful place. And true, it is filling up at a fairly fast rate. The dilemma is, you know, a lot of people don't want to go over there. It's, you know, it's not close to anything. There's no... Well, there are some hotels, I guess, if you want, that runs right there by Anderson Split Pea Soup. But
there's plenty of accommodation there.
Yeah, there really is. It's just not in a real public type of area, you know, where there's buses and that kind of thing. And,
right.
You know, it's not a touristy kind of place. And everybody would love to have one in their backyard. Of course, Monterey is a gorgeous place.
Of course.
But, see, this was not a new thing. When the four-door was charted to be closed, the federal government, put up this reuse committee, whatever it is, down there. And the cities of Marina, Seaside, and a bunch of other people started putting their hands into the thing. And, of course, the University of California took over a chunk. And or is it State College up there? State University, I guess it is. You know, the Monterey Bay, whatever it's called. Anyway, they have a major part of it. Anyhow, so what's going on now is... They decided, well, the federal government's not ready to open another national cemetery this close to one that's virtually a brand new one there at Santanella. It's only less than 10 years old, I guess.
That's right. It's quite new.
And it's probably got 20 or 30 years left before it's going to start filling up. Mm-hmm. And so they don't want to build another one that close to it. That's part of the problem. Now, one of the things I've been trying to do over the years is to say, okay, fine, don't worry about building it right now, but reserve the land for future use. When Santanella starts filling up, we need more land. And right. Fort Ord's a nice place, quote, free at this time. You know, you don't have to buy it from anybody.
That's right.
You know, that'd be really nice. So a big push was made to say, hey, why don't we just do a state veteran cemetery? Well, California doesn't have any state veteran cemeteries. So the big push came on many years ago under Pete Wilson's administration. And the problem is that the state has to fund it. State has to take care of it.
And so they don't have any money.
Well, they had money. They had some money, you know. But what
time,
happened
yeah.
is, you know, things got kind of out of control in Sacramento. And we just lost a governor because our state was bankrupt, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bonds were going down the tubes and everything else. So
yep.
Everybody was all for replacing the governor. Maybe, you know, the new governor's not perfect. But his whole objective is to turn the state around and try to make it a financially viable state. And so this big push for the Veterans State Cemetery... It's probably not taking a you know front position because it's one more thing to add onto the state budget. Certainly, the federal government will build it. They've already said they will.
Mm-hmm.
They'll put up the money. They'll go in there, do everything that's necessary to get it up and running.
But the question is when.
When? Well, not so much the question from the federal is when. It's that the state is a little nervous about saying, okay, well, we're ready, you know.
Can I interject something here, please? Terry, isn't it true that there's already been 160 acres set aside for a state cemetery on the Fort Ord property?
That could be the correct number. I'm not totally sure on that. But it's not so much that it's set aside. That doesn't make it happen. The thing is once the federal government funds this thing...
It needs to be maintained by the state.
Exactly. And that's
but
a huge amount of money.
One of the things right now that is going around... to try to get some funding for the cemetery at Fort Ord is by putting a $1 surcharge on every death certificate that is issued in the state of California. And I think that it's really sad that men and women can be born in the Monterey Bay area, live their lives here, leave this area to go to war, come home to this area, that have to be buried somewhere else. And the thing about the veterans is some of them go to active duty. They go to war. They literally fight for their lives. Then they return to this country and have to fight to live. They have to fight for their health benefits. They have to fight for a place to be buried. It's really time that our state and federal government get off their butts and take care of our veterans. There is so many things that are funded by our state and federal governments
Well,
that I think
funding is
way...
always Donna. Hang on a second. Funding's always a matter of priorities. But you know, I had no idea this is going to start such a Donnybrook. I've got two people here on hold, and I'd like to bring some more people into the radio program.
Okay.
They may have some fresh insights on some of this. Let me see who has been on hold the longest period of time. That would be Richard and Marina. Richard, thank you very much for joining us this morning. What can we do for you?
Good morning. I am the Monterey County Military and Veterans Affairs Officer.
You're a good man to join us today.
And I am very actively involved in the cemetery project. I was glad to hear somebody mention the $1 death certificate surcharge, but that is a dead issue. I was pushing it real hard, but we can get one local legislator to support it. I had another one tell me that death taxes don't poll well.
Well, that you see, I think that all falls back to the civilians joining the veterans.
Well, that,
because
that,
you know what it all comes down to? If enough people back this, if the legislators and the people in government, if they want to keep their jobs, they need to go with the voters.
Okay, but...
And so the voters need to pull together to support our veterans.
Amen.
And that's what's going to get this done. These people are voted into office. If their constituents stand up and say, look, I'm not going to vote for you if you don't start doing something for our veterans, then they're obviously going to have to do something for their veterans or find another job. That's where the civilians step in. People need to step up and just say, enough is enough. I'm not going to vote for you if you do not take a better and more polite look at our veterans' situation.
Richard,
that's
did
what
you,
it comes down to, is the vote.
Richard, did you have something else you wanted to
cover? Yeah, a couple of clarifications. One, there are two state veteran cemeteries now. Well, one is Yountville, which is kind of closed, but it's there for the residents of the Yountville Veterans Home. The other will be dedicated on Friday near Redding, the Northern California State Veterans Cemetery in Shasta County.
Mm-hmm.
That happened a while back and is finally getting to completion, but they also got one of these state cemetery grants. People are talking about the federal money to build it and then a combination of state and local money to maintain it. I keep hearing that the state's broke. They figure somewhere between $400,000 and $600,000 a year to run a cemetery out of a multi-billion-dollar a year budget. We're talking pocket change. I mean, according to the Chronicle, what was it last week? That's how much we pay for the governor's wife's office every year. If we can afford that for the governor's wife, I think we can afford it for Monterey, San Benito, Santa Cruz, Santa Clara, and San Luis Obispo County vets. It ain't that big a chunk of money. There is a 175-acre parcel. The body responsible for Fort Ord is called the Fort Ord Reuse Authority, and they have a master plan for the entire redevelopment of the old Fort Ord. The city of Seaside and the county of Monterey ceded part of their allocations of that property specifically for the use of a veteran cemetery. So that's locked in. That's part of their master plan. And they'd have to revise the master plan to change that. Now, I don't know the details because I don't understand some of the legal issues, but the Fort Ord Reuse Authority is being asked to look at if there's some way they can help with some of their revenues to come up with part of the maintenance costs, and that's brand new.
Well, Richard, I can assure you that while you've been speaking, Terry here, who's quite involved with this, has been taking some notes and intends to run down some of these things. Did you have a final word? I'd like to take another call. We've got people waiting on hold.
Yes, and I just want to reiterate what the young woman was saying, that people have to make this an issue. It's not going to happen unless politicians feel the pressure. And I know that our local, the county board here is solidly behind getting this done.
Mm-hmm.
But if the state's too broke, think of the county position, since counties are a creature of the state and they take our money anyway.
Yeah.
So the county can't do it. We need the state to step up. And I do want to say one more thing. That is that we can't wait I was running some numbers the other day just on mortality for Korean and Vietnam vets, or for Korean and World War II vets. If that cemetery opened 3 years from today, or 3 years from this Veterans Day, is what I was projecting,
mm-hmm.
200,000 World War II and Korean veterans will have died in California. There's an old bill for World War I veterans pensions that was in Congress for years and years, had more sponsors than it took to pass, and never got out of committee, and all of the World War I veterans died and became a moot point. I don't want to see that happen with the cemetery. I don't want to see, well, yeah, we'll get around to it. Let us study it. Let us figure it out. Let's see, the State Department of Veterans Affairs is seeing let's how we do with Shasta, and then we'll look at Monterey. Too many people will be dead. Too many people will not have had the opportunity. We're talking to Paul, who I spoke to for quite a while a couple of weeks ago. He's in his 80s. He doesn't have forever to wait for people to figure out what they're doing. It needs to get done.
Well, Richard, thank you for calling and making the point. We appreciate you taking the time today.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
Have a great day. And let me see here. What have we got? 18 past. Why don't we go ahead and take another call right now, and then maybe we can move the break a little ways down the road. Scott in Santa Cruz is joining us. Thank you for taking the time, Scott. Good morning.
Good morning. Michael, I have 5 words for you. Soldier, you succeeded. Well done. Your mission was to hold the communists at bay, and you proved the domino, a theory, when we withdrew what happened in Cambodia, so that it wouldn't happen in South America when Nicaragua, etc., were taking over in Central America. They were going to, you know, do the same thing there and attack us from our soft underbelly. So you fought the Cold War. Maybe you were victims of bad politics, but you fought the Cold War and you won when the wall came down. That's all I had to say.
Thank you very much for saying it, Scott. I appreciate your call.
God bless you.
God bless you.
And Donna, beautiful work.
Thank you very much.
Gotta say, I agree with Scott. I know what he said would be controversial to some folks, but I think it's a no-brainer. But then again, I'm just an old hardhead. It is 20 minutes past 11. We'll be back on the Saturday special in a few moments. We're supposed to be joined by Ken Burke. Hopefully he'll be in the, he may even be here. I can't see through walls. In the meantime, I think Terry will hang out with us and Donna. So please stick with us on the Saturday special. I'm Charlie Friedman, back in a couple of minutes.
Yes. This is going to be good. Awesome. I can't even remember the last time I was at a concert.
I know. It's been like ages.
Man, I can't believe you got tickets.
Yeah, Josh, you're the man. You were the man.
Well, come on, man. Don't thank me yet. I mean, it might not be as good as they say. You never know.
Whatever, bro.
I mean, guys, we got to keep moving. We're going to get there early.
Hustling up.
Wait, hold on, guys. ATM machine. I'm a little light on cash.
No, wait up, Greg, man. I think I might have some for you.
Yep. You can be my sugar daddy.
Hey.
Yeah.
Here you go, man.
Wow. Whoa, $50. Pretty generous.
Hey.
You sure you're Jewish? Come on, Josh. Don't get all sensitive on me, man. It was just a joke. It was a joke. Will you tell him, Rob?
What? What do you want me to tell him? That I didn't think it was funny either?
The first step in fighting prejudice is taking a stand. Imagine the power of one voice. Find your voice at freedomcenter.org. A message from the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center and the Ad Council.
As you sit where you are right now and listen to the sound of my voice, as a question, I wonder what it would be like to work in radio. Ever crossed your mind? How do I get started? Is my voice good enough? Well, KSCO is looking for board operators. This is an entry-level position, no experience is necessary, and full training will be provided. So if a fun, pleasant working environment in radio is on your dial, call Rosemary at 475-1080 during business hours.
Michael Mira on the Small Business Cafe.
It's fun. I enjoy myself.
I get to meet all sorts of small business owners and hear their ideas,
get inspired, share success stories, inform, promote, and inspire. That's what we do in the Small Business Cafe. And every time, I learn something new. Everybody that listens in does, too. I look forward to every Monday at 1 o'clock for that hour of listening to small business people share their stories.
The Small Business Cafe, Mondays between 1 and 2. Brought to you by FirstNet Mortgage, Slater Construction, Pacific Mountain Advisors, and Santa Cruz Small Business Monthly Magazine.
Hi, this is Don Fredrickson from GotNet.
.net specializes in business services. Whether you need a T1 or T3 or just a place to host your website, .net has a solution to fit your needs. .net offers server colocation and custom website development. We have e-commerce servers, streaming audio and video servers, and Cold Fusion and database servers available to handle your hosting needs. .net understands that businesses rely on the internet, and we work hard to assure fast, reliable service. Call .net today at 460-2000. Food, shelter, clothing, net. .net.
Back we are on the Saturday special. Charlie Friedman here. We're joined in the studio by Terry Reeder, who's been talking with us about issues concerned with the Veterans Cemetery. And Ken Burke just came in. He is from the government. He's here to help. Sorry about that. I couldn't resist. Now, in all seriousness, Mr. Burke is the Veterans Services Officer of the County of Santa Cruz and is due some respect for that. So I'm sorry. I was being a smartass. Terry, during the break, you and I were talking about this issue that that our caller had raised about the actuarial facts of this matter, that veterans are aging and that so many of them are expected to pass on every so many years. And you had a couple of points you wanted to make regarding that. Why don't you go ahead?
Well, there's a couple of things. One is the veteran himself or herself does not select where they're buried.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that's done by the survivor. The person that has the authority over the estate, essentially. So, presuming it's a husband-wife thing, the husband's the vet, the wife is the one that would select, make the arrangements with the mortuary to call the cemetery and make sure the space is available and go through all that. So, you know, you can't reserve a place in a veteran cemetery. You know, it doesn't work that way, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So, another thing is that, though it'd be wonderful to have a veteran cemetery right here in Monterey, I think it'd be great. It's not going to be reserved for residents, people born here, people that served at Fort Ord. It's going to be open to all honorably discharged veterans all over the country.
It's a national thing. A guy from Utah could say, I want to be buried.
Absolutely. It could be from Florida. It could be from Washington, anywhere.
And you also wanted to mention that there's a veteran cemetery opening up in Shasta County.
In Shasta County. Now, this was alluded to by the Monterey Veteran Service Officer. I'd mentioned there are none at this moment, per se. Well, I was leading up to the fact that next Friday, the one at Shasta County will be dedicated,
mm-hmm.
and it'll be opened, and it's the first true veteran cemetery in the state of California that'll be operated by the state, funded to be built by the federal government in exactly the same manner that Fort Ord would be. And so it's going to be a real good test case to see how it works. So, and I think there's a couple other ones in the state that are kind of down the line, but this is a perfect example of the fact that it can happen. So I'm not trying to be devil's advocate here, but it's just that you do have to contact your legislators individually. Every single assemblyman, state senator,
sure
the governor's office, but that's one person.
Right. It's the legislature that passes the bills.
Exactly. Yeah. They're the one that spend the money.
Right. Ken, welcome to our studios. Mentions here that you want to discuss entitlements for vets at the state and federal level. You've got a book in front of you that has to do with this. I'm sure you have a few things that are right on the top of your head, and we're interested in knowing what they are.
Right on the top of my head. I think the biggest thing, and I just want to go back to the issue of the cemetery in Monterey. Having graduated from Fort Ord, I really feel that it's a wonderful place.
Keep talking.
Go ahead. I think it's a wonderful place to build a cemetery. I think it makes a lot of sense. I know about the 75-mile rule. I think the issue of the fact that we're in a coastal community makes a big difference to veterans that are from the area that that served at Fort Ord. And I, like many others, would much rather be looking at the Pacific Ocean than I-5. With that said, like my compadre Rich Garza from Monterey, what we do is essentially try to entitle or to help benefits with obtaining their entitlements. A lot of those revolve around compensation for service-connected disabilities, VA pension if they're entitled, educational benefits. And those educational benefits aren't just for the veteran, but they're also for their dependents. Other things that we help with are vocational rehabilitation, entitlement to VA life insurance. And one of the things, I don't know if you discussed it earlier, but one of the great things that we have here is the local vet center in Capitola, mm-hmm. which helps returning veterans as well as veterans of Vietnam and previous wars with treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder and also grievance counseling.
One of the other things that Donna had mentioned was help for veterans in securing employment, either returning to jobs that they gave up to go or obtaining fresh employment when they get back. I'm wondering if the county provides anything in that regard.
Well, the county per se doesn't. EDD does.
They have a special program
They have people that are called DVOPs, basically Disabled Veterans Outreach Program Specialists, individuals who are primarily concerned with helping veterans transition back into employment. And, of course, we all know that EDD went away from having the just drop-in facilities where everybody who was unemployed could go in, but they still maintain counselors that are specifically slated to assist veterans with retraining, with getting resumes online, and also with expanding their employment opportunities.
Thanks for clarifying that. We have a caller on the line that I want to go ahead and give a chance to hear. This would be John in Carmel. John, good morning.
Good morning. 245th Surveillance Airplane Company, Marble Mountain, Vietnam, 1970.
Thank you for your service, sir.
So I was, I'll tell you what, had a good time, believe it or not. Learned an awful lot. I just wanted to let you know that I tried to sign up for veterans' medical rights, and they would not give it to me. There's a 2-year suspension right now because they don't have the money. Is that correct in Santa Cruz?
That is, I wouldn't say they don't have the money. Let's put it this way. Our current administration, more than 2 years ago, decided that there should be an income limitation on veterans who do not have a service-connected disability.
That's correct. You either have to have a Purple Heart or you have to be on
compensation.
Yes, a compensation.
Okay. What I might suggest to you, John, if you're in Carmel, is talk to Rich Garza's office. You could certainly call me also, but Rich is very familiar with this issue. What happens oftentimes is we try to get veterans service-connected for an issue. Even a 0% sometimes can get you in the door. What I'm trying to say here is that there oftentimes are ways to work around the eligibility requirements.
Right. Well, I'm in one of the situations where I don't need the money, but I was appalled. Or I don't need the benefit, but I was appalled that you couldn't even get on the list. I'm with an airline that I'm just retiring on, and, of course, we lost about 90% of our retirement and 100% of our medical, so I thought just in case I need something, this would suffice for it. But that wasn't the promise that was made. I'm an RA.
You are exactly right, John, and I agree with you, and there but for the grace of God, because I signed up about 5 years ago. I do not have a service-connected disability. They didn't care what my income, what my assets were at the time that I signed up. Now they do. During the Clinton administration, they didn't care. This administration cares.
I'd like to say something, please. I've been talking and working with veterans every day for the last year, and it's absolutely appalling the fact that these guys apply for their benefits, apply for services, and the time it takes to even get anything back that, you know, their papers have been received is absolutely ridiculous. The time it takes for our veterans to get their benefits, if they get them at all. And for our government to do that is totally outrageous. They send these guys off, they go, they give their lives, they give their time to support and fight for this country, and they come home and they get nothing back. They go to war when they're sent. That day they get their orders, they're out of there. They come back, they're trying to get what they need, and our government just totally slacks on the whole thing. And you can ask any veteran out there how long it took them to get the benefits that they need, that they deserve, and they will tell you that it takes a long time if it ever comes.
It takes way too long for many people.
And it shouldn't be that way.
It shouldn't. But first off, let me make sure that you understand one thing. Basically, what Rich Garza and I do is to work for the county trying to help people get these veterans from benefits from the federal government. So a county veteran service office is not the federal VA.
Right, and I'm speaking towards the federal government.
Right, what I also don't want is for people to kind of say, well, the VA is completely bad, the VA is completely wrong. A lot of claims that we see do get resolved in a fairly reasonable amount of time, and by that I mean maybe between 3 to 6 months. I know that sounds like a long time, but sometimes that happens.
I would really have to disagree with that time base.
Yeah, but, well, listen, may I finish? We see that. We also see cases where it takes them well over a year. And then we see appeals where sometimes it takes 2 years before it gets to the Board of Veterans
Appeals.
So what
they're trying to do is wear you down. You know, I have a friend of mine that had 3 Purple Hearts. He was on one of the boats down in Four Corps. And, again, they hammer him every time he gets a chance. He's not a well-educated man, and I just think it's so wrong. The other thing is I don't know why we can have the CSCUM University there that's an alternative university, and we cannot have a veterans cemetery there. That is ridiculous. I don't know why Mr. Panetta hasn't gotten on. I think he's a veteran, too, if I remember correctly. Why? You know, he pushed so hard for that university, and a lot of it is illegal because of the acreage that they contain. Why aren't they pushing? Why hasn't Mr. Panetta been put on the spotlight and say, hey, are you supporting this? What will you do to help us?
And I go back to what Rich said, because I think Rich was absolutely right, and I agree with him. I love the idea of being buried at Fort Ord. I went through Fort Ord, and I have a particular love for the environment there. I think Rich, you know, has that appreciation, but he's right. Unless this is made a big issue, it isn't going to happen.
And Panetta and the rest of the stars that are out there don't want to do it. You know, and that's the shame of it. But I appreciate your program. Any veteran that's ashamed of what he did in Vietnam, that is not right. I mean, it's the Northeast News that made that issue bad. And I'll tell you what, there were people in the 30s that didn't care what happened in the concentration camps that were out there. And any time somebody confronts me with that about Vietnam, I tell them, because of your success in stopping the Vietnam War, you put about 1 million people into concentration camps, men, women, and children, and Pol Pot wouldn't have happened if we were able to do what we were supposed to do there, and we did win. How many battles did we lose? We lost one battle over there.
John, you're absolutely correct about that, and I want to thank you for calling and making the point on the radio station today.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Have a great day.
Charlie?
Enjoy your Veterans Day when it comes along next Friday.
May I just add something to what John said? And one thing is, the first point that he brought up I think is really important, that he was not able to get VA medical care.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways to get VA medical care. Please, if you've been told that you can't get it because of your income, that may or may not be correct.
Don't quit trying.
Don't quit trying. Please contact either Rich or myself.
Right? But some of the guys out there that are really sick do not literally have the time left for the government to catch up. They're going to be dead before they get their benefits because of all the holdups that go along with getting their benefits. And I think the point here is, right now, you know, we have a voluntary military. You know, you sign up, you go. If this country does not change the way it treats its veterans, does not take better care of them when they come home, we're not going to have people volunteering to go to war and to join the military. As soon as we do not have soldiers that are pure of heart, that are joining the military because they believe in this country and they believe in defending it, this country is going to be in big trouble. And if the young people that are thinking about joining the military today can talk to some of our veterans and realize the way they've been treated when they returned, we're not going to have a lot of guys banging down the doors to join to serve this country.
Well, Don, I can help you a little bit with that. I teach high school. And I talk to a lot of young men and women about the opportunities that are available because I'm a veteran myself. And, of course, I'm loyal. I tell them to go Navy, for God's sake, you know.
But
the thing is that I can give these people some kind of an idea of what they can expect. And the one thing, particularly at that stage in life, you're figuring later on, you know, for the most people, they'll be able to take care of themselves. What they're looking for is education benefits, and the education benefits veterans get. I got GI Bill when I was younger, and I never had a quarrel in the world with the VA. They handled my case perfectly, and I know plenty of other people who had the same experience. So, you know, I just don't want anybody listening to the program to get the idea that we, you know, thanks for your service, sucker, now hit the bricks. I just, that doesn't happen. There's difficulties here and there, and there's limited capabilities of how to deal with things, but you've got a lot of dedicated people like Ken Burke here who are working their heads off to try to get things to work well.
And Charlie, can I just add, I think that one of the biggest issues that is a problem for not only the veterans and their dependents, but the VA, is the issue of trying to legitimately resolve claims for compensation. Whether or not something is service-connected, it's just as though you had a workers' comp claim. You look at what caused this, what brought this about. There are a lot of things that people were exposed to that created cancers during Vietnam. Those things, some of them are presumptive, and you can get compensation for them. Some perhaps should be, but they aren't. And I think a lot of our problems revolve around those issues.
We're going to take our last break on the Saturday special. As soon as we get back, we'll be joined by Donna, who's calling from Salinas. We do have a couple of other callers on the line I'm hoping we can get to. Just now, this is Charlie Friedman. This is the Saturday special. See you in a couple of minutes.
Here's the bad news. Credit card companies are charging up to 22% interest these days. Now the good news. If you're a homeowner, there's a good chance that you can save a lot of money on credit card debt with a tax-deductible mortgage loan, even if your credit rating is low. Hi, I'm Jim Chubb with Pacific Inland. We would love to help you save money by consolidating credit card debt with a new home mortgage. Please call us at Pacific Inland today, 475-2600. That's Pacific Inland at 475-2600, licensed by the California Department of Real Estate.
The world is changing daily. Old familiar views don't seem to work anymore, and that's why there's Embassy of the New World Order, the one and only foreign affairs radio broadcast, where all politics are global, Sundays at 11 a.m. Greetings and salutations. I'm Cyril Vatomsky, your progressive multicultural ambassador of the New World Order, and I am here to offer you tools and information to better navigate through murky waters of international politics. I will gladly listen to your opinions and will be happy to tell you where you are wrong. Join me for the free weekly foreign affairs seminar, The Embassy of the New World Order, Sundays at 11 a.m. on KSCO.
Santa Cruz teacher Casey Evans has something to say about the special election.
Arnold Schwarzenegger calls me a special interest because I belong to my union. He's wrong. Students are my special interest. When the state couldn't solve its budget problem last year, the education community agreed to give up $2 billion in funding. The governor promised to pay it back this year. He broke that promise. My students are suffering. He forced a costly special election on our state. I was upset about the waste of taxpayer money. Now I feel the best way to say no to the governor's bad ideas is by voting no on 74, 75, and 76. 74 singles out teachers to blame for the problems of public education. 75 blames unions for the state's problems because we spoke out against the governor's broken promise. 76 would cut $40 billion from education over the next 10 years. Don't play the governor's blame game. November 8th, vote no on 74, 75, and 76.
Paid for by the California Federation of Teachers Co-Prop Ballot Committee.
Do you like pets? Are you a pet fanatic? We've got a segment of Good Morning Monterey Bay just for you. It's Pet Talk with Angeline Siegel, brought to you by Callie's Whole Pets. Learn about puppies and kittens, vacationing with your pet, exercise, the best thing to feed your animal, and other issues like dealing with a senior dog. These are just some of the topics that Angeline will address during Pet Talk, brought to you by Callie's Whole Pets. That's Tuesday mornings at 7:45 during Good Morning Monterey Bay.
And back to the Saturday special with your host, Charlie Friedman.
And indeed, that's where we are. Charlie Friedman here. I'm joined in the studio by Terry Reeder and Ken Burke. And one thing I wanted to slide in here real quick, it was something that an earlier caller had brought up, but he made the point that when we ended our involvement in Southeast Asia, a lot of people suffered terribly for that. One of the things I point out to people who take that point of view, the real killing in Southeast Asia began after we left. War kills people by thousands. We lost 55,000 people, and our allies in South Vietnam lost thousands. The NVA and Viet Cong lost thousands. But it wasn't until after the war ended that you had the killing fields of Cambodia and the re-education camps of Vietnam, which took millions of lives. And I would remind you, boat people, what does it take for human beings to just get into a boat and head out into the ocean, figuring that the water, salt water, is better than where they are? That freaks me out. Let's join our next caller on the line, Donna from Salinas. Hello, and thank you for your patience.
Yes, hi. My name is Donna Teresa.
Yes.
And I'm from Salinas.
Yes.
And I'm a civilian. I'm not a veteran.
Mm-hmm.
But I am a school outreach coordinator with the Teach Vietnam Network, which is affiliated with the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Foundation in Washington, D.C. In regards to the cemetery in Fort Ord, I have created a petition for people to sign online, which is going to go to all the legislatures here in California, because I feel it's important, and I agree with Donna Jacobs wholeheartedly that this is a disgrace that we do not take care of our veterans.
Donna, I tell you what, we've got a couple of other people on hold I'd like to get to, but I think what you've just raised is extremely important. Would you please give our radio audience the information they need to participate?
Yep, I sure will. It is called petitiononline.com/fortord104/petition.html.
Okay, now that you've done that, it's rather long and complicated. I want you to do it again, just a little bit more slowly, please.
Sure. It's petitiononline.com/fortord104/petition.html.
And what this does is make our voters' wishes known to our elected representatives.
Right. It's a petition for anybody to sign, and I hope civilians sign it, because it's going to go to them, and we're going to keep reminding them every day that we're not going to forget about the cemetery. And if we keep it out in the open, in the public, they're going to have to build it sooner or later. I hope sooner, because we can't wait 5 or 10 years from now. We need the cemetery now.
Donna, thank you very much for calling and giving that information.
Thank you, Donna.
Appreciate it. Going to take our next call now. Going to try to get to all of these people before the top of the hour. This is Paul in Carmel. Paul, good morning.
Good morning. Well, first of all, I want to thank you for taking the time to honor our veterans. As a veteran myself and one who's been proactive in the American Legion as well as the Monterey County United Veterans Council, the foundation for the cemetery is also an important part of the cemetery. And we are seeking donations to that, and it can be donations from the public as well as donations from fellow veterans. It's a way of showing both the state and the federal government the public interest in what the cemetery would provide for us locally. If people are interested in making donations, there again, Richard Garza definitely has all that information. He comes to our meetings on a regular basis and updates us on issues coming down from both the state and the local government. It's very important to us because we have many veterans already on the peninsula who have their loved ones in an urn somewhere waiting for the day that they could hopefully put them to rest at the Fort Ord Cemetery.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your making those points.
Thank you, because it's very important, and although Shasta let me take one other point, too.
Okay, sure. Go ahead, Paul.
Earlier, it was way earlier in your program, you talked about veterans and becoming veterans.
Right.
You know, as they go through basic training, they become a veteran, and we have a real problem with our veterans organizations, because a lot of veterans out there think, well, I didn't serve in battle, I didn't serve, overseas, all I did was go through and I did my service and that was it. Well, the problem is, once they get through their 90-day period, they are recognized by the Veterans Association as a veteran. And that means that they are qualified and entitled not only to benefits, but if they happen to serve through wartime eras, then they also qualify to be in the American Legion and other types of veterans organizations. And what we try and do is promote veterans being more proactive in bringing up these issues to our leadership and to our politicians. But it's also important that the civilians also realize that their donations to the cemetery are just as important. Not only that veterans are trying to take care of veterans, but that civilians are also trying to take care of veterans.
Good point. That's one that Donna's been hitting time and again today, and for very good reason.
Well, thank you for allowing me to speak today, and one of those, thank you also for serving, as well as, defending our freedom of speech and us being able to intelligently talk about this conversation and this topic, which is so important not only to us, but to the whole community here on the peninsula.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too.
You know, that point he made is really a very good one. This, what we're doing today, exercising our First Amendment rights. This is the bottom line. This is what veterans have fought for since 1776. And we're still in that business. I noticed he mentioned the, there's the differentiation, for example, for people my age between a Vietnam War veteran and a Vietnam era veteran. And I'm a Vietnam era veteran. I was never in combat. But you know, I certainly, if somebody says, are you a veteran? I don't have any hesitation about saying, yes, absolutely I am.
And I'd like to kind of address that, because one of the things that we see at veteran service offices oftentimes is people that come in who have family members who say, well, my husband or my wife was a veteran. It's amazing, even today you'll have women that served during World War II that don't consider themselves veterans, and
wow,
yet they're entitled to the full range of veterans' benefits. Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, 90 days plus one during a wartime period, you're entitled to VA pension if you're disabled and it's not the result of a service-connected disability. But many people are veterans. I know somebody who actually thinks that they're not a veteran because they just didn't serve in combat. And this is somebody who should know better.
Yeah,
so it's
we were all under orders. If you
right.
didn't happen to serve in
right.
combat, that's because those weren't the orders you were cut.
That's right.
But an awful lot of the people who served in World War II never got shot at. But are you going to tell me they weren't part of the war effort? I'm sorry.
You were ready to go.
Absolutely. And you're under orders, and you follow them, and you go where you're told to go.
So you're veterans, and that brings up another important issue for people to remember, especially with disabilities that may have incurred while they were in the military. When you're in the military, you're on duty 24 hours a day.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you were, quote-unquote, off-duty. You were
the phrase you're looking for is on liberty.
On liberty. You were riding back to the barracks on your motorcycle.
There you go.
And you fell off and you broke your wrist. And you can't move it anymore. That's a service-connected disability.
You would not have been there.
You wouldn't have been
were
there.
Were you not a serviceman.
Exactly.
Thank you very much for making that clear. We got calls still. Let's see how many we can get to. Paul in Monterey, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Hey, this is the original Paul. I was cut off and I wanted to say a few more words to thank you for this perfect program and the incredible contributions that both Donnas have made. And I want to make a recommendation that I think this is important enough for you to have a whole two-hour program and invite a guy like Salinas and Maldonado and Mineta.
What I would suggest you do in that regard would be to call the radio station prior to 2 o'clock in the afternoon on any weekday, ask to speak with Rosemary.
Oh, okay. Great.
And she would be the one that you might be able to make such arrangements with.
But
talk with her.
In response to one of the comments made, I did send this letter to Panetta, and I got no response from him. I sent letters to both Boxer and Feinstein, and their offices indicated that there was no interest in this process. So it's important for all the people, all the veterans, all the families, all those that are interested in this to bombard the offices with their letters and indicating the importance of this thing.
Okay.
And
thanks.
I sure appreciate you guys.
Thanks a million, Paul. Really
take
good.
Bye.
Let's see here. Westside Al's been on the line for a little while. Good morning, sir. Thank you for your patience.
Hey, Charlie. How you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Great. You guys are coming in real fine over here in Pleasanton. I'm over at my mom's place. She got in an automobile accident.
Oh, dear.
A little help, but you're coming in crystal clear. I got a couple of comments about the VA healthcare system. I'm a mildly disabled service-connected guy, and it seems to me some years back when the VA was attempting to expand its enrollment, they opened things up all the way up to Category 8, and a lot of the people that got into the system at the time mainly wanted to get in to get the prescription drug. At the time it was a $2 copay, now it's a $7 copay. I'd go down there to Monterey in my 65 Dodge and pull in the parking lot full of Mercedes and Cadillacs with old geezers that didn't have any service-connected disability at all, but they just wanted to save some money on their prescription. And to qualify for the prescriptions, they had to go through a complete diagnostic procedure, which really overloaded the system. And when I volunteered for the Air Force in 1962, I don't remember them ever telling me that by virtue of having served that I would be entitled to lifetime medical health care. Is that something new that's been included in the agreement between the government and the military? Because I don't remember there ever being that such a provision.
I don't think so either, gentlemen. Who wants to respond first to that? Go ahead, Terry.
Oh, thanks. Everybody's got a red face here.
Please,
Yeah, I guess it is. It used to be that you either had to be lower than a certain income level. Of course, honorably discharged is the key factor there.
Right.
Or have some sort of service-connected disability, and that can range anything from being a former prisoner of war to a Medal of Honor recipient to Purple Heart recipient to actual injuries. So there's several qualifications. You know, this the Category 8 is what we're talking about right now. That's the one that's kind of up in the air a little bit. But obviously, that's Category 8, and I think there's A, B, C, and all the other seven. So there's several different categories and several different ways that, you can get into the system. And obviously, if you have a service-connected disability, the care for that will be free when you go to into the VA system. And you can enroll immediately if you have a service-connected disability. It's not something that you have to wait until it opens up again. That's something that's out there right now.
Well, the system has worked rather well for me, I must say, but I still continue to be curious about how it is that certain people with no service-connected disability are being afforded the privilege of accessing the VA healthcare system when it really is in dire need to service those people that do have disabilities, but especially now with the Iraq War.
If I can just this is Ken. If I can just piggyback on this, the idea you know that you express about people that don't have the service-connected disability, Category 8 now, used to be 7. While I understand that separation, of course, now if they're Category 8, they can't be, so that occurred recently. But one thing about, you know, quote-unquote, an old geezer going in a Mercedes or a Jaguar, one of the things that amazes me is being in the field of veterans benefits. I know personally of two ex-POWs from World War II who drive nice cars, who were shot down, who, despite my pleading, my begging, my cajoling, have not filed for any kind of a service-connected disability. And they get VA health care. So when they go up there, they're not even listed as service-connected, believe it or not. So things aren't always exactly what they seem.
Well, I take that point, Ken. But it does not totally eliminate my concern about the system being overloaded with people that perhaps should seek their own private medical insurance.
And while I agree, and I think that the VA could be perhaps more timely, maybe what we ought to look at is that if we're going to have X number of men and women in uniform, we should have the attendant required medical services to support
right,
them when they get
right.
out.
Well, all funding comes from the House of Representatives, as you know, so we need to put some pressure on those people. I agree with you. The system is very badly underfunded, and I understand they're going to close the Capitola Clinic here pretty soon.
Well, Al, I thank you for calling up and making the point. It's something that we all can think about, maybe do something about. Donna called earlier. Yeah, I'm going to try to get to another caller here, so thank you for taking the time today. And that's Al. Let me see. Who've we got? Jim and Salinas has been patient with us for quite some time. Jim, good morning. Thank you for calling the program.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm a combat veteran from Vietnam. I was seriously wounded in 1969. And I got medically evacuated from the country, but the wounds all healed, and I'm okay, except my hearing's real bad at times. But I went and tried to collect from the VA on hearing problems about a year later after I was discharged because I was a draftee. And I was given a test by a lady up at San Francisco VA hospital, and she actually even told me I was cheating on the test. So I never went back to the VA and dealt
Jeez,
with them.
What a sweetheart. What, tell me something. Did she happen to have a broom and maybe a big pointy hat and your little dog, too?
Pretty close. Of course, when I did it, that was right in the middle of the Vietnam protest years, and, of course, San Francisco was a hotbed for that, and I assume that she probably did carry a poster once in a while. But
aha.
Getting back to the, and I've never dealt with them since because she made me feel like a third-class citizen.
You have an experience like that. Your desire to go back and repeat it is rather thin.
I'm chopping
the bit here.
Oh, I know Ken's got something to say, and I have a feeling that this guy could be very happy with what
yes.
Ken says.
And I'm sorry, where do you live again?
I live here in Salinas Valley. I'm a lifetime resident, lifetime California person born here.
Okay. One thing that you should do, and I understand your reticence, but, you know, go into the Monterey County Veterans Service Office explain what happened. This can be reopened. One thing about these kinds of claims where somebody denied it, even though it was clearly a case where it should have been granted, you can always reopen it. You just need some new material evidence. Rich will help you with that. If you're in my office, I'd help you with it. That's something that you don't want to just let go and be part of your past and not deal with. That should have been service-connected.
Okay, what I'm more so calling about it, of course, is the Vietnam Cemetery over there at Four Door.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with Donna, who called a while ago. They got the petition going, and I encouraged her to get it going. And there are a lot of good comments on there. This is something, again, that is necessary. And I've been listening to all your callers, and pretty much it gets down to one reason and one reason only why this is not being done, and it's the local politicians, state politicians, national politicians. Most of them aren't even veterans, never served. The ones that did serve, I certainly, you know, applaud them, but even some of them won't help. The money's there. I think just the other day, Schwarzenegger gave money to do something with frogs for their environment to see. I'm sitting there, you know, and then yesterday I see they're knocking down part of Four Door to put another village up for low-income people and all kinds of stuff. I go, gee, how do all these projects get going and keep going, and yet all us veterans want is a resting place? And I served at Four Door, and I know how immaculate that fort was, and driving by it on the Highway 1 there, it was an honor to go by there, and people appreciated going by there. It was an outstanding place. But no, we put a school there. You know, they want to turn East Garrison into a housing facility now and all that stuff. Those are all projects where money and taxes are being made out of. So those are okay. But for a veteran cemetery, it's like, oh, put the brakes on that. We can't. You know, it's really a sad situation.
Jim, we've just got a couple of minutes left to wrap up the program. I want to thank you for your call. And sharing what you had to share here, we're going to go ahead and I got about, a minute of airtime left, so we're going to go ahead and let Ken, Terry, and Donna all have a final word. Donna, what final word can you leave us with?
I'd just like to say the whole thing comes down to just putting our elected officials' butt to the fire and letting them know that, you know, the people vote them in, the people can vote them out. They seriously need to start looking at the veteran situation.
Okay, Donna, thank you very much. And
Ken,
Terry,
like,
we've only got 20 seconds apiece, dear.
I'll make it quick. I want to thank KSCO Radio, and it's wonderful sitting here in a studio in the shadow of a 9-foot American flag dealing with freedom of speech.
And Ken?
And Charlie, I want to thank you for inviting me. I just simply want to say, please, if you have questions about veterans benefits and you're in the area, give me a call, 831-458-7110.
KSCO Santa Cruz, KOMY Watsonville. I'm Charlie Friedman. This has been the Saturday Special. Stay tuned to Talk Radio Santa Cruz.
Thank you, Charlie.
Radio, I'm Ken Duffy. Washington, D.C. in the crosshairs. We're learning more about 3 terror suspects picked up in Great Britain, possibly targeting the U.S. for future attacks. One had photos of the U.S. Capitol building and other Washington landmarks.
The charges against them look like this. Wasim Mughal is 22 from Chatham, Kent. He faces 10 charges. Uni Soli from Shepherd's Bush in West London faces 8 charges. Tariq Al-Dur, who is 19 from Paddington, West London, he now faces 8 charges, and he may have been involved in credit card fraud for financing terrorism.
Fox's Kelly Wright, the FBI doesn't believe there's a credible threat against Washington. Lots of talk, but will there be action? The Americas Summit finishing up in Argentina as nations decide on creating a free trade zone extending from North to South America. Nations like the U.S. and Mexico want talks set up in April. Meanwhile, the streets...